"You have a beautiful home," General Wilson said when they were in the foyer of the house. Castillo thought the house made Tara of Gone with the Wind look like a Holiday Inn. Off of the foyer, a curved, double stairway rose to the second floor. It was not hard to picture Clark Gable carrying what's-her-name, the English actress, up the steps to work his wicked way on her.
"Thank you," Mrs. Masterson said. "It's been here a very long time, and God spared it."
I told her that was God's reward for her unrelenting battle against the gambling hells of the Mississippi Gulf Coast, Masterson said.
"Don't mock me, Winslow," she said. "But you'll notice what did happen to the casinos."
"Faulty argument, darling. Katrina also wiped out Jefferson Davis's home, and you know that he was a God-fearing gentleman, always battling the devil and all his wicked works."
"That's right," General Wilson said. "I'd forgotten that. My wife and I went to his home twice when I was at Fort Rucker. That was damaged?"
"Wiped out," Masterson said. "Utterly destroyed."
"Then you were very lucky here," Wilson said.
"Yes, we were," Masterson said. "And thanks more to the charm of the salesman than any wise planning on my part, there were diesel emergency generators in place to kick in as they were supposed to when the electricity went off. When my cousin Philip flew in with emergency rations, that's his bonanza in the hangar, he found us with Betsy and the Lorimers watching the aftermath of the disaster on television."
Wilson shook his head.
"You were very lucky," he said.
"You're an admirer of Jefferson Davis, General?"
Masterson asked, changing the subject.
"We went to the same school," Wilson said. "At different times, of course."
Then he added, very seriously,
"Yes, I am."
"That's the right thing to say in this house," Masterson said, "from which my ancestors marched forth to do battle for Southern rights."
"And just as soon as the history lesson is over," Ambassador Lorimer said, "I'm sure Colonel Castillo would like to have our little chat."
"Why don't you take the colonel into the library, Philippe?" Masterson said, smiling tolerantly. "I'll send Sophie in with coffee and croissants."
"This way, Colonel, if you please," Lorimer said.
The library, too, would have been at home in Tara, except that an enormous flat-screen television had been mounted against one of the book-lined walls, and half a dozen red leather armchairs had been arranged to face it. And there was an array of bottles and glasses above a wet bar set in another wall of books. Ambassador Lorimer headed right for it.
"May I offer you a little morning pick-me-up from Winslow's ample stock?" he asked.
"No, thank you, sir. I'm flying."
"One of the few advantages of having a heart condition like mine is that spirits, in moderation, of course, are medically indicated," Lorimer said as he poured cognac into a snifter.
"Churchill did that," Castillo said. "He began the day with a little cognac.
From what I hear, it was a healthy belt. And he was a great man, wasn't he, who saved England from the Boche?"
"Yes, sir, he was.
In large part, in my judgment, because he put Franklin Roosevelt in his pocket."
"Yes, sir, I suppose that's true."
Lorimer waved Castillo into one of the armchairs and sat in the adjacent one. A middle-aged maid wearing a crisp white apron and cap came in a moment later with a coffee service and a plate of croissants. Lorimer waited for her to leave before speaking.
"I was trained to be a soldier, Colonel," he said. "Are you familiar with Norwich University?"
"Yes, sir, I am."
"It was one of the few places in the old days where a black man had a reasonable chance to get a regular army commission. So I went there with that intention. Just before graduation, however, I was offered a chance to join the Foreign Service, and took it primarily, I think, because I thought someone of my stature looked absurd in a uniform. I have a number of friends who are Norwich, sir. I remember a pithy saying I learned as a rook at Norwich. Never try to bullshit a bullshitter. Keeping that and the fact that I spent 36 years as a diplomat in mind, why don't you tell me why Secretary Cohen is trying to put me in her pocket?
I'm not sure I know what you mean, Mr. Ambassador.
I think you do, Colonel. Let's start with why she doesn't want me to go to my late son's estancia in Uruguay.
The Secretary believes I would be ill-advised, sir, Castillo said. She asked me to tell you that. He nodded.
She sent the same message to me through others. What I want to know is, why? I'm old, but not brain dead. I don't think it has a thing to do with my physical condition, or for that matter, do I swallow whole the idea that the Secretary, as gracious a lady as I know she is deeply concerned for poor old Lorimer. Why doesn't she want me to go down there?
Castillo didn't reply immediately as he tried to gather his thoughts. Lorimer went on.
I have my own sources of information, Colonel. Let me tell you what I've learned. It is the belief of our ambassador there, a man named McCrory, who is not known for his dazzling ambassadorial ability, and that of the Uruguayan government, that my son died as the result of a drug deal gone wrong. I'm having trouble accepting that.
I don't know what to say, Mr. Ambassador.
Let me clarify that somewhat, Lorimer said. Sadly, I did not have the same relationship with my son that Winslow Masterson enjoyed with his son Jack. I didn't particularly like Jean-Paul, and he didn't like me. I doubt that Jean-Paul was involved in the illicit drug trade, not because he was my son and thus incapable of something like that, but because it's out of character for him.
He paused, then finished.
So if he wasn't in the drug trade, Colonel, what was he doing that caused his murder?
Castillo didn't reply.
Please do me the courtesy, Colonel, of telling me I can't tell you, rather than I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
I can't tell you, Mr. Ambassador.
We are now at what is colloquially known as the deal breaker. You have your choice of telling me, which means I will listen to whatever else you have to say, or not telling me, which means our little chat is over, and Mrs. Lorimer and I will be on the first airplane we can catch to Uruguay. We've been imposing on the Masterson's hospitality too long as it is.
Mr. Ambassador, this information is classified top secret, presidential. Lorimer didn't seem surprised.
To me, Lorimer said simply, that strongly suggests there has been a presidential finding.
Castillo didn't reply.
I will take your silence to mean that there is a presidential finding, and you don't have the authority to confirm that. Your choice, Colonel. Get on that satellite telephone and tell the secretary, or whoever has put you in your present predicament, that unless you are authorized to tell me about the finding, the Lorimers are off to Estancia Shangri-La.
Well, what the hell? If he goes down there, and there's no way I can stop him, the chances are that he'll do something, not on purpose, to compromise that operation and thus the presidential finding. And for some reason, which is probably foolish,
I trust him. He's a tough old bastard.
I have that authority, Mr. Ambassador.
And you are not going to tell me?
The president was at the airbase in Biloxi when we returned from Argentina with Mr. Masterson's remains and his family. He informed me there that he had made a finding. A covert and clandestine organization had been formed and charged with finding and rendering harmless those responsible for